Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is the present more dangerous than the past? Despite the remarkable strides we've made in science and medicine, hazards seem to be growing in the modern world. In fact, more than half of the 20 most costly catastrophes since 1970 have happened just since 2001. My guest today asked dozens of experts to consider the impact of decision-making on human outcomes in an effort to understand not only why we do certain things, but why our choices so often seem to defy reason. Erwan Michel-Kerjean is Managing Director of the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton Risk Center. Along with Paul Slovic, he is the editor of a new collection of essays called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. Erwan, welcome to Think.
Delighted to be here.
Time magazine called this the decade from hell. Is it really that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you look at just what happened here in the United States over the past 11 years, starting 2001, the terrorist attack of 9/11, a few weeks later, the anthrax crisis, a few weeks later, the Enron crisis, and then you have a major blackout in 2003, and then 04, 5, 7 major hurricanes. In 08, another major hurricane Ike in Texas, and on the top of that, a major financial meltdown that affected every part of the world. So, yeah, that's clearly a decade from hell.
And let's talk about some of the reasons. For one thing, we are globally interconnected in unprecedented ways now, which means some risks that were once confined to local areas suddenly become everybody's problem.
Yeah, that's correct. I think what happened over the past 30, 40, 50 years, we have been pushing very hard for globalization of economic and social activities, which is great in one hand, because there are many benefits to this globalization, whether it's the fact that you can travel from all over the place for very cheap, much cheaper than you will do 20 years ago. Now you can Skype people at 5,000 miles away from you, and you don't pay anything. So I think the good side, the bright side of globalization is access to more people, more good transportation costs close to zero. So these are good things. What people didn't necessarily anticipate is the flip side of this globalization is the fact, as you mentioned, Chris, that these risks are becoming more and more global. So an earthquake in China today is not necessarily just an earthquake in China. It becomes a major issue for companies like Home Depot and Walmart. Walmart has over 80% of its suppliers in China. So obviously that's a major issue for global supply chain.
And another net effect of this is that we are dealing with more simultaneous crises these days across multiple arenas. So we have climate change, and we have a financial crisis, and we have the Haitian earthquake, which are unrelated but all require major resources of time and money and work.
Sure. I mean, I think it's fair to say that maybe 30 or 40 years ago, we used to look at these catastrophes, disasters, crises, black swans, whatever you want to call them, as very, very rare, low-probability events. And that was, I mean, at some point, that was true. You had a major crisis every 15, 20 years. Now you literally have another crisis every 6 months. If you take Texas, for instance, when Hurricane Ike hit landfall in 2008, because we were already in a major financial crisis, in a way the media coverage was for that hurricane was not that high, even though Ike was one of the most devastating hurricanes in U.S. history.
And it seems we are in great jeopardy from exactly the risks that we really can't predict, or at least that we fail to predict.
Or that we don't want to predict.
Yeah.
I mean, what we do in The Irrational Economist, in that book, which is somewhat unusual book, and we can talk more about that in a few minutes, is recognizing that maybe some of these large-scale disasters are preventable, or at least we can do a much better job than we have been doing over the past few years in anticipating them, also managing them. And obviously, the latest on the agenda is the earthquake that just happened a week ago in Haiti. And after a first wave of trying to achieve survival rate that is better than what we have seen, the next step will be obviously how do we reconstruct that country? I mean, what would be the economic recovery of Haiti in the next few months and years?
Let's talk a little bit about Haiti. One of the things that I think is really fascinating that's in the book is this phenomenon called psychic numbing, which is the idea that hearing about one person in a disaster is really upsetting, and we can sort of relate to that. But the more it is, the less we're able to care.
Absolutely. Well, that's kind of one of our first chapters that was actually written by Paul Slovic, with whom I edited the book. Paul is one, if not the top psychologist in the world today, who has been looking at these issues for many, many years. And that's why the book is called The Irrational Economist, because the rational, traditional view of the world will tell you that you should care more about two people than one. That makes sense. If you care a lot about one person, you should care a lot more about two. And if you care about more two than one, you should care more about four than two. If you extrapolate that, well, you should care more about 50,000 people dying than you should care about 10,000. But what Paul showed through that chapter is really that the rational model does not work anymore. What happened is we tend, our attention, our compassion is decreasing with the number of people. So we'll pay much more attention if we can characterize the victim, one victim, than if you are really talking about two or three victims. So basically our attention, even contribution or help, is decreasing with the number of victims. And Paul has spent a fair amount of time in places like the Darfur to look at these issues and see how we can overcome this challenge.
I'm wondering if relief organizations need to change the way they communicate with the broader world about the problems that they're seeing on the ground.
Well, I mean, that's a big issue, so it would take more than just one interview to go over that. But Paul has been working with many of his organizations, UNICEF being, you know, I think one of them, trying to see how we can increase the donations from all over the world. In a way, media, much wider access to media, even through radio, internet, and why not, has been playing a major role here, I think, for the good. Making disasters that's happening many miles away from where we are, sitting in our office, for instance, much more salient than they could have been otherwise. So I think donation, I mean, Red Cross in Haiti already, I think, leveraged like $100 million and so forth. So I think people are paying much more attention through the media than maybe could have done 10 or 15 years ago. That said, obviously there are, as you referred to, Chris, there are some major challenge to overcome in terms of how we pursue these disasters, and maybe more importantly, how do you plan for the long term? I mean, now we all feel very humbled and very sad for what's happening in Haiti. The question is, what will be our level of concern a week, a month, a year from now? Maybe we would tend to forget about what just happened a week ago.
Is there something to the idea that people become fatigued by all this concern about other places and somehow they're just not willing to process any more sadness and therefore they move on to something else?
Well, that's a great point. We try to look at that in different chapters in the book. We even, you know, talk about how brain science could help looking at this issue, two chapters by, I mean, one by Colin Kammerer, the other one by Olivier Houllier, looking at neuroeconomics. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's fair to say that even if you don't consider any of these catastrophes, disasters, in your own day-to-day life, you always have major challenges to overcome, the current state of the economy being one of them. So asking to be concerned about what's happening elsewhere than in your own life is pretty demanding. And media, again, play a role here because we're all watching TV news at night and we all see all these risks and disasters happening, so we tend to be concerned. The question is for how long?
There's also this question that even when intentions are entirely pure, it's nearly impossible to present statistics on any sort of crisis without an unintentional bias. Hearing that, for example, 1 in 10 people get food stamps somehow triggers a very different reaction than saying 10% of Americans get them. Now, we all learned in third grade that those numbers mean the same thing, but they don't sound the same to us.
Well, I mean, you put it in a very nice way. I mean, we all learned that. I mean, rationally, that's supposed to be the same. In reality, you tend to identify yourself much more when a story is told, for instance, than a pure statistic. Statistics tend to be very far from attention and feeling, so you don't really feel the numbers. And that's, you know, some of the discussion that Paul Slovic and I have had for quite some time now. How can we educate younger people, the new generation, our kids, to feel numbers? It is very hard. Again, if I tell you that 10,000 people died in Haiti, and 2 days later I'm saying, oh, no, it's not 10, it's 50,000, do you make a difference in your brain or in your heart? I'm not sure you do.
Simply because the numbers are too large to comprehend in both cases?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Erwan Michel Kerjan is my guest. He is managing director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Together with Paul Slovak, he has just edited a new collection of essays called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. We'll resume our conversation about this in just a couple of minutes. You can join us by getting online at 1-800-933-5372. We also want to take a minute to let you know that you can receive a copy of this new book, The Irrational Economist, when you call us now at our brand new number, our support number for KERA. That telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online to kera.org. Make a $120 contribution to KERA, and we would love to be able to send you the book with our compliments. I'm joined now by Jeff Whittington, who is senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris, and hello to you. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Yes, it is the winter membership campaign. We would love to hear from you right now at either kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. We can say thanks when you join the station at the $120 membership level with your very own copy of Erwan's book, The Irrational Economist. It's very intriguing. It's a really great way of looking at an interesting and different way of looking at all of the issues that we're facing in the country and the world today. And that's why we're talking to him today on the show. We make this show every day with you in mind, and that's what it's all about. So we're asking you to support it right now by calling 1-888-694-6931.
We are asking everyone who listens to KERA regularly to make a contribution. In the past, you might have thought, oh, they're just asking those other people. This drive, we are really focusing on getting every one of you who listens to the station to recognize its value in your life and make a contribution. The amount of that contribution is up to you. You might want to do set up one of our sustaining memberships and do a certain amount per month. For some people, $10 or $20 or $30 or $50 a month works really well, but you know that correct amount. You just have to call us 1-888-694-6931 and let us know what that is.
You are that other people. Attention you. <Yeah. laughs> You are the other people. We are talking to you. We are asking that you pick up the phone right now and call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org and pick up your own copy of The Irrational Economist. Support KERA at whatever level is comfortable for you, but please do it right now. The drive-in's for you when you make that call or online contribution.
We have a wonderful offer that we can give you this hour. Austin College is presenting Greg Mortensen. You know him best as the author of the bestseller Three Cups of Tea. There was a regular edition published. He also made one for kids that really has allowed a lot of people sort of understand a situation that seems far away but is in fact something we can all relate to. Greg will be speaking Saturday, February 6th at 7 at the Eisenman Center in Richardson. We have 10 pairs of tickets total to offer. Each pair will be given to someone who makes a $150 donation on a credit or debit card at 1-888-694-6931.
Austin College is bringing Greg Mortensen in to speak, and they have made these tickets available to you. They're going to go really fast, and this is pretty close to, I think it might actually be what the tickets cost, but they've made these tickets available to you and to us to offer you. To help out the station. So please do your part right now if you want the tickets or if you want a copy of Erwan's book or any of the thank you gifts you've heard mentioned over the last few days. Call 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
If you think about it, it is somewhat irrational that so many tens of thousands of you listen every day to the show and only a small number make a contribution when you all recognize its value in your life. And you, I would say, just about every one of us, of you, have a few extra dollars that you can send KERA's way and make sure that public radio stays strong and healthy in your community. You can go online to make a contribution at kera.org or give us a call at 1-888-694-6931. We'll resume our conversation with Erwan Michel Kerjan in just a minute.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Erwan Michel Kirjan, Managing Director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He's just edited a new collection of essays called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. If you'd like to have a copy of the book and support KERA at the same time, you can call us at 1-888-694-6931. Make a $120 contribution to the station and we'll send it to you. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Erwan, you contribute a chapter to the book that I really like called Risk Management 2.0. And you insist that traditional models of risk management are badly outdated. Can you talk specifically about what needs to change?
Sure. Well, I think that was really the main aim of the book was really to do two things. One is to take a look at what happened in economics and social science over the past 40 years and to see whether if we continue to do that the way we have been doing it, we'll be equipped to face the new era of catastrophes, and clearly we are not. So what you have in the book is more just than a collection of essays. It's like going to the best restaurants, and you have a very large menu, and you can pick up any entree appetizers you want, and I will guarantee you that the chef who's going to cook your meal, or at least the appetizers or entrees you selected, will be one, if not the best chef in the world. And that's what really the rational economist is about. We start with Tom Schilling, who received a Nobel Prize. We follow with George Akerlof, who also received a Nobel Prize in economics. Really, all of these authors thinking maybe differently about how economics should tackle these issues. So to answer your question, I think it's fair to say that The Irrational Economist and the chapter itself I wrote is about thinking very differently about where we're going in the next 5 to 10 years in this new risk environment. That said, to answer your question, Chris, I was trained in mathematics and physics before I turned badly, according to my mother, I think, when I did a PhD in finance. I think it's fair to say that economics is a very young discipline compared to medicine, compared to chemistry, physics. And as any young discipline, it is learning how to do better, how to change the world in a better way. So paradigms change over time, and we have seen paradigms in economics and psychology change a lot over the past 20 years. So where are we now? I think it's fair to say that we have been using a lot of very sophisticated mathematical models, and clearly in finance that's the case, trying to replicate how we as individuals or we as corporations or countries are behaving. Over the past 10, 20, 30 years, what happened is you have an interesting marriage or wedding between economics, who are doing a lot of models, and psychologists trying to better appreciate how we really make decisions. And that's really where we are now, trying to move from a very dry, hard mathematical models of how we are supposed to make decisions to something that is a better translation of how we actually make decisions. So that's for the umbrella on the book. On risk management, you have exactly the same thing, where telling you that you have a 10% chance of having a major hurricane in Houston, Texas, or Dallas this year is one thing, but how do people perceive that probability? What does it mean for action? What does it mean for response to a potential of an earthquake or a hurricane?
And it becomes critical to understand the way that we might make a different decision about that hurricane risk, depending on our personal experiences, how old we are, how everyone else around us is responding to the same threat that might be very different if the situations are different.
Yeah, and very different also depending whether you're a man or a woman, mm-hmm. Something that obviously economic models don't do. I mean, they assume that we're all the same age, all the same economic profile, all the same sex, culture, etc. So there are major differences, absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Daniel in Dallas. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
Great, long-time listener, second-time caller.
Welcome.
A couple of things struck my interest when you talked about donor fatigue. And back during the tsunami, I was single and unemployed and not able to donate. I wasn't even a member of KERA at the point. But I wonder how that area is doing now that such focus has been off of them for the last few years since the main flood of donations came in? And also, when you talk about statistics, could we get a more realistic sense in terms of the population of Haiti? You know, we hear 200,000 dead. What is that in terms of the population? Would you could say 1 in 5, 1 in 4? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call. I think I heard that there's about 10 million people who live in Haiti. I don't know if that's close to what you know of, Erwan.
Yeah, that's correct. About 9 million people. So that give you the answer to your second question, Daniel. I think what is important here is Port-au-Prince, which is a major city, is about 2 million people. And we already know that somewhere between 100 and 200 people died there. So it's already 10% of people dead. And you have many orphans and many people are injured. So it would take another week or two to really get a better sense of the nature of the human tragedy here.
And any lessons to be taken from the long-term response to the Indonesian tsunami?
Sure, absolutely. I was in Bangkok, Thailand, about 3 months ago, precisely to take a look at what Daniel asked, which is, well, where are we 4 or 5 years after the major tsunami that killed, you know, close to 300,000 people within literally 10, 15 seconds? A lot has been done in terms of aid, and that helped many people survive the tragedy itself. Now, a lot of remain to be done in terms of better government intervention, better private reaction to economic recovery, and that's why I was talking about that with you, Chris, a minute ago regarding Haiti. I think we're like 30% down the road only out of 100% in terms of economic recovery. So back in Bangkok, I warned the government there that, you know, you really have to do a much better job in terms of preparedness, because the next time many people may not donate to help you because you're not doing the 101 preparedness work that you're supposed to do. And that was precisely 3 days before another earthquake hit the region. So I got many phone calls right after the earthquake there again back in September.
The other thing that comes up in the book over and over is that we tend to prepare immediately after something happens for a similar occurrence happening again in the near future. And then when that doesn't come, we tend to sort of slack off and go back to our old habits.
Yeah, well, people don't like to be surprised. I mean, in a negative sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And we never prepare enough. I mean, there are many of us who can go through through life, and you know, we are facing very unexpected, very sad events, and these events will be, changing our life and the life of our loved one forever. And we can think about these events before, but typically always for others. You don't want to think that could happen to you, and obviously things happen to you, and you have to go through these very sad days. When it's over, you don't want to forget about that, because typically they tend to define you from now on. At the same time, you want to think about other things that are more positive. Again, you don't want to forget about that, but you want to think about more positive things. That's true at the individual level. That's true at a society level when you go through a series of major hurricanes, again, in the U.S. or the 9/11 attacks. You know, it's here. You know, it could happen again, but after a few years without nothing new, you tend to think that's over. And again, you don't like to be surprised, and typically you're surprised by things you didn't prepare for.
Is it a matter of the devil you know versus the devil you don't know? Somehow when we can't imagine something happening, we just don't even want to, we don't even want to entertain the notion that it could be very dangerous.
Well, that's partially true, and that's, you know, one of the chapter by Karlan Kuski, Cass Sunstein, and Richard Zeckhauser, Jen Pratt and Richard Zeckhauser, all of them at Harvard, talking about virgin risk versus experience risks. And for virgin risk, we tend to pay maybe less attention before it happens. And when it occurs, obviously, that's more silent in our mind. So that's a short answer. I think it's fair to say that we already have so many things to think about in our daily life, then adding up and up many more potential catastrophes that can happen to us tomorrow is sometimes simply overwhelming, and we like to focus our attention on one or two type of risks, not 25.
There is clearly a need for development of new risk management solutions, perhaps even products that, insurance companies or different organizations could come up with. Can you speak about some of the ideas that might help to mitigate risk, understanding that we'll never be able to prevent things like tsunamis from happening in the first place, even if we're able to prevent people from being injured?
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's the difference between preparing before and coping with after. We have four or five chapters in the book looking at these issues, again, ranging from the financial crisis to pandemics, terrorism, or natural disasters. And all of it, again, I mean, you have the same type of answer, which is, well, if we are right in saying that the future will see more and more of these crises, if you're the CEO of a company or the lead of an NGO or the president or prime minister of a country, and if you believe that everyone is right and all these co-authors are right in saying that the future will look darker than we have seen in the past 10 years, then you have to ask yourself, how should I reposition my organization so it can cope better with more recurrent, more large disasters in the future? So you mentioned insurance. Many people don't realize that the insurance industry has become one of the largest industries in the world, especially with more and more countries emerging from poverty. They are getting richer and richer, and as you're getting richer, you have more things to protect against. So what we have seen over the past 10 years, to take natural disasters or terror as an example, is the fact that organizations realize that the financial capacity of the insurance industry may be limited, and that maybe we should be trying to access more capital, more money to cover against these large-scale disasters through different sources. One natural source is the financial markets. I know people tend to be very cautious about financial markets these days. There are also good things with financial markets, the fact that you can access many investors at the same time. So you have seen over the past 10, 15 years now the development of what we call CAT bonds, stands for catastrophe bonds. And the idea is to send your exposure or diversify, cover your exposure against disaster directly through the financial markets instead of relying only on insurance and reinsurance companies. And that's a market that moved from being $500 million 10 years ago to being like $20, $25 billion today. So it's definitely in the right direction.
Erwan Michel Kerjan is my guest. He is managing director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Together with Paul Slovic, he has edited a new book called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. We'll resume our conversation with Erwan in just a moment and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. We also invite you at this moment, you, that is right, you sitting there listening in your car, at your desk, in your house, on your walk in the middle of the city with your headphones on, we invite you to call and join the station. The telephone number to do that is 1-888-694-6931. You can also do this online at kera.org. And Jeff, we do have copies of The Irrational Economist to send with our compliments.
We do, Chris. And thank you so much for listening. And if you're interested in your own copy of The Irrational Economist, you can get that with our thanks as a thank you gift when you call 888-694-6931. Now, we're not selling you this book at the $120 membership level. We're asking you to join the station at the $120 membership level, and we'll say thanks with a copy of this book. You can join the station at any level right now. Go out to the bookstore, get your own copy of The Irrational Economist at whatever the cover price is. We encourage you to do that if it's something that you're interested in, but we just try to make it easy for you to get a copy of the book if you like that and support KERA at the same time. Member, listener, contributor support is what drives this radio station. And without your contribution, the station doesn't exist in as strong a way as it does with your contribution. Only with your support are we able to continue to bring you this kind of programming day in, day out.
You know, it may have occurred to you after you heard the news of the Haitian earthquake, so many Americans went online and made contributions or did those little micro payments to the Red Cross through your cell phones. It occurred to me when I was thinking about how I might be able to help, well, my goodness, Haiti's been in such bad shape. Why have I not thought about this before? We are fortunate at KERA. We are not in crisis mode here. We're coming to you at as sort of a regular fundraising drive, wanting to stay strong and continue serving you, maybe you're thinking to yourself, why have I not supported KERA? I've counted on them. I need KERA to be strong so that I can have the information that I want, so I have this companion through the day. Your contribution at whatever level allows that to happen. For a long time, there has been sort of a small minority of people. Now we're asking everyone who listens to make a contribution. It doesn't have to be something you can't afford. Just pick the amount, make the call, 1-888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. Folks might want to consider a sustaining membership, Jeff.
Yeah, if you join the station and become a sustaining member, it divides your annual contribution into easy monthly installments. So a $120 annual contribution is just $10 a month when you join as a sustaining member, and it makes it more affordable for you to budget your support of KERA through the year. Maybe you can give a little more. You can do $20 a month, and that comes out to a total of $240 a year. But your $20 a month contribution is worry-free. It happens automatically. It's straight from your bank account to KERA's account, and it can go as long as you want it to go. You can change it anytime you want to. If you would like to use your credit card to join today, we have some very special tickets that are available. Austin College is bringing Greg Mortensen, author of the bestseller Three Cups of Tea, to the Eisenman Center in Richardson on Saturday, February 6th at 7 p.m. He's speaking there. And we started the hour with 10 pairs of tickets. We have 5 pairs of tickets left to see Greg Mortensen on Saturday, February 6th. If you donate $150 to the station with a credit or debit card right now at 888-694-6931. You have to call 888-694-6931 to get the tickets. And there's only 5 pairs left at that level right now. So don't wait. Call right now.
If you are not going to be at the David Cassidy, Davy Jones extravaganza taking place the same night, it would be a lovely event to attend. We want to say thanks to those of you who have been contacting us to make your contributions. Thanks to Kirk Sisko in Allen and John Stankiewicz in Dallas for your contribution. Thanks to Glory Vela in Arlington and Yuga Saladi in Louisville.
Thank you so much. Also to Nicole Horn in Dallas, Dr. Harold Jeffcoat in Fort Worth. Also, Dennis Cady in Wichita Falls and Aura Peterson in Azle. Thank you so much for calling 888-694-6931 or contributing online at kera.org.
We do have a new number, but it still takes the same minute and a half or 2 minutes to make this contribution when you call 1-888-694-6931. You can also, as always, make your contribution online. That's also a great place to check out many of the thank you gifts. If you are interested in the tickets to go see Greg Mortensen and hear him talk about Three Cups of Tea, you'll need to give us a call and make a contribution with a credit or debit card. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. Back in just a moment with Erwan Michel Kirjan.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Managing Director of the Wharton Risk Center at the University of Pennsylvania, Erwan Michel Kirjan. His new book is called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. Join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. Erwan, you write here about the idea that caring for other people has very clear selfish benefits, and this is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just reality. Will you talk about that?
Sure. Well, this is kind of the irony of a small planet or a global interdependent world. If you believe that what others are doing may have an impact on your business or politics or even on your own life tomorrow, or what people very far from where you live are not doing, and because of them not doing the proper things, they can affect your own future. Well, being selfish means taking care of others because you have a clear interest in taking care of others. So I think we are entering a totally new era of behaviors in terms of how we looked at other people, how we feel that interconnection between all of us, or among all of us.
You know, diplomats have understood this concept for a long time, and we have international aid organizations that sort of get this. I wonder, though, if you're also seeing a shift even in corporate culture to understanding that a certain amount of social responsibility is good for the welfare of a corporation.
Sure. Well, I think that's clearly happening. I mean, that's one of the courses I'm teaching here at Wharton in the MBA program called Environmental Sustainability and Value Creation. I think more and more businesses realize that even being green or socially responsible is not just being, you know, doing some greenwashing, as we call that. There is value here. There is value because your suppliers, your consumers are demanding a very different type of product, very different type of services than was the case 10 years ago. You created green technologies, for instance, that did not exist 10 or 15 years ago. So this is a brand new market, and in any market you have or you will have losers and winners. Obviously, big corporations want to be winners, and rightly so. So that's where we are today.
And I guess you have to achieve a sort of critical mass so that if a great number of corporations are choosing to behave responsibly, then it's no longer the ones who behave badly that do well. Whereas in the past, many companies have said, we would like to do things differently, but we would lose if we were to spend more money on our resources than our competition.
Oh, exactly. You need, yeah, that's the notion, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. Well, that's something two of my colleagues, Jeff Hill at Columbia University and Howard Conreiter, for whom actually this book was assembled. Howard turned 70, and we decided to celebrate 40 years of great research and applied research that Howard Conreiter had done. They have been studying that tipping effect for many years, building up of some of the work that Tom Schilling, who received the Economic Nobel Prize 3 or 4 years ago, did 40 years ago. And the notion is very simple. I mean, you can apply that. I mean, many of your listeners can apply that to their own life. If I'm living in a village or area, I'm the only one doing one thing, you know, I have extra cost doing it. If everybody else is doing it except me, well, I feel bad about it, and I want to do it. If more and more listeners are giving to your radio station, if I don't, I feel bad about that because I'm kind of free riding here. So I think more and more of that will be emerging. The other thing that's happening with what we call social networks is that the information flies very quickly. So if you're not doing the right thing, more and more people are watching you. And because they're watching you, not doing the right thing will be known by many people right away.
Can you talk for a minute about the interplay between individual decisions and actions and those taken on a collective basis?
Sure. Well, before I do that, I'd like to say that what we've tried to do in the book is to write a fun book. I mean, this is not a boring book.
No, it's very interesting. That's why we have you on.
Yeah, that's good. No, by that, I mean, many economics books requires you to know a lot about economics or social science in that case. I'm mentioning that because the bridge is that natural bridge between what you and me could do every day. I think that relates to that notion of critical mass. If you have enough people thinking differently today, elected officials, CEOs of big corporations will have to change their mind. I was last year at the World Economic Forum in Davos, and for the past 2 or 3 years now, you see more and more sessions in Davos about these issues. How can we do better in the world? The more sessions like that in Davos, the more important will be the effect on public policy, on CEOs from all over the world, and eventually on the state of the world.
Does this effort to be more responsible also ultimately protect us from irrational exuberance in the economy if we're trying to proceed a bit more cautiously?
Yeah, well, irrational exuberance a la Bob Shiller. I hope so. I'm somewhat pessimistic given what's happening now. I mean, a year ago we were all thinking that the world, or at least the financial world, was coming to an end. And 5 or 10 years ago, we never talk about the role of government. We all thought that government shouldn't be involved in any market except for some regulation. So now we allowed all governments around the world to literally save the financial system, and just 6, 10, 12 months after, we tend to have forgotten that. So we all tend to be very myopic and short memory. I like to think that we could do a better job here in terms of preventing the next financial crisis.
What have brain researchers and psychologists learned about that myopia, the fact that we can understand immediate risk and reward quite well, but we have a hard time, say, planning for retirement or a long-term crisis?
Yeah, well, that's what we call in economics hyperbolic discounting, the fact that we put a very heavy weight on what could happen to us tomorrow, less so what could happen to us a year from now, and even less so what could happen 10 or 15 years from now. So the weight is much important for what could happen tomorrow. So obviously, if you're asking a 20 or 30-year old person to think about retirement versus a 50 or 60-year-old person, the response would be radically different. Again, that's something you need to, as an economist, you need to understand, coming from the psychology background, to integrate into your economic models. But there are solutions, and we talk a lot about solutions in the book and how you can overcome these behavioral bias.
In terms of the solutions to these problems we have with bias and even to just crises, what should we think about when deciding the appropriate roles for public organizations and governments as opposed to private organizations? What do we need to throw into the mix?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the frontier between public and private is disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people, including very top people, realize that the two spheres, if you wish, need each other. And it's better to get at the table now and to discuss about what could happen, what would be the role and responsibilities of the public and private sector, than just ignoring each other and then facing the crisis itself. As I like to say, crisis time is a bad time to exchange business cards. And we see that more and more.
You mentioned that you were feeling somewhat pessimistic and that we are exuberantly optimistic once again. What do we need to do to make sure that we come out of specifically the financial crisis, having actually retained the lessons that we were taught a year or so ago?
Well, I think you touched on that, Chris, a minute ago. I think one of the solutions we talked about in the book is how can you extend that time horizon? So instead of making my decisions for the next quarter or the next year, I can start making my decision for the next 3 or 5 years. I'm not talking 50 or 100 years, but just extending the time horizon of decisions we are all making from the next month to the next year or the next 5 years. When you do so, you have to project yourself 5 years from now. And when you project yourself 5 years from now, you tend to be much more cautious and realistic about the decision you're going to make tomorrow morning.
Erwan Michel Kerjan is Managing Director of the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton Risk Center. Along with Paul Slovak, he is the editor of a new collection of essays called The Irrational Economist, Making Decisions in a Dangerous World. Erwan, it's been a fascinating hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you all of you who have listened this hour, who are loyal members of the station. Especially, we want to thank those of you who have just made the decision to join KERA, whether by going online to kera.org or calling us at our brand new and improved number, 1-888-694-6931. 1-888-694-6931. New telephone number works the same way. You call up, tell somebody on the phone what your contribution will be and how you want to pay for it, and they will take care of the rest. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And here's the news flash. There are only two pairs of the tickets to see Greg Mortensen left. So you need to call right now, 888-694-6931. Or you got a call to do this. It's a $150 contribution on a credit or debit card, and we will sign you up for tickets to see Greg Mortensen. Austin College is bringing him to the Eisenman Center in Richardson on February 6th. It's a Saturday at 7 p.m., and it's a $150 donation on a credit or debit card, and those last two pairs of tickets could be yours if you call right now, 888-694-6931.
We've sort of just gotten this fundraising campaign underway. We've already heard from a number of you who have chosen to make an additional gift. We know now from the fabulous folks we have in research that there are some of you who every time we have a fundraising campaign make a contribution. That's great. If this is how you choose to sort of do your membership to KERA, we are delighted. The amount of those contributions is up to you. A lot of people like to do $10 or $20 a month, but the amount that works within your budget is great. It may be that you can do $200 a month and sort of not have to think twice about it. When you call 1-888-694-6931, what you're doing with your money is guaranteeing that public radio, this independent, locally programmed and owned service, stays vibrant within your community and across the country.
And it's very easy for you to do. You can make an additional gift. You can, as Chris said, become a member for the first time. Maybe your membership is a couple of years out of date. That's okay. All's forgiven. When you call 888-694-6931, we will get you re-upped and get your membership back current. You can use a credit card, as we mentioned earlier. You can write us a personal check if you'd like. We'll send you an invoice if that's what you want to do. You can sign up as a sustaining member as well. Most people use a credit card because it keeps us from having to send you an invoice and you send a check back in. Your dollars go to work right away for the station. And you also, if you choose a membership thank you gift, you can, you know, it helps us process that a little bit more efficiently as
comes
well.
Comes in just a few weeks, and there you go. 1-888-694-6931 is the number. You can also go online to kera.org. Doug Crofina of Argyle has done it. Thank you, Doug. Janet Greathouse in Plano. Sure appreciate that. Also, Sally Lowry in Dallas and Rick Kaluri in Allen. If you are on the line now, we have folks ready to take your call. If you are online, that's very simple. You can sort of jog through and decide how much you want to contribute. Some of you like to take a thank you gift. Some of you don't. Here's how that works. We're going to be as honest as we possibly can. We pay for the items that we send to you, and sort of the amount that they cost us is deducted from what we spend on the station. But if you want to take a thank you gift, please. If this is going to be the tipping point for you, that's why we have them there.
Yeah, it is a thank you gift. You don't have to take one, but we do have mugs. We do have tote bags. We do have the book that was co-edited by Erwan Michel Kerjan, our guest in this hour, The Irrational Economist. That's available at the $120 membership level. So if you would like a thank you gift, that's fine. I mean, that's why we do the thank you gifts, is to help, you know, give you a little bit of an incentive. And when it's an author that's you've heard on KERA, whether it's on the Diane Rehm Show or Fresh Air or on one of the news magazines or on our show on Think, you know, that's why we make those available, is because we know that you're interested in some of these guests. You're interested in going a little bit further and reading for yourself what they have to say.
This is a particularly interesting book. All the chapters are pretty brief, but they're written, as Erwan was telling us, by really the top people. This is like reading maybe the top 30 or 40 scholars in this area of thinking, and you have it all compacted into this digest, and you can pursue additional research if you want to, but it's a great introduction to the way people are starting to look at economics and human behavior and decision-making. This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, K261, CW100.1 in Tyler, K202, DR88.7 in Wichita, 88.3 in Wichita Falls,
yeah.
And 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman. I'm reading that backwards and through the glass. So.
Wow, you're special.
Thanks for your contribution.
888-694-6931 is the number to call. Online at kera.org. Of course, no matter where you listen, you're listening to your source for NPR News. You're listening to your source for local programs like Think. You're listening to KERA. It's your public radio station. Please don't expect that someone else will do what we're asking you to do, which is contribute some dollars to the station. Contribute so that the station can remain strong, so that we can have a strong and up-to-date and steady base of support for your public radio station. The programming here is produced for you, and it's used by you, so close the circle by contributing some dollars to help pay for it.
Coming up in the next hour, Jeff, of course, we have Walter Isaacson. We had him on a couple of years ago for his biography about Albert Einstein, which was very well received. He's also done them on Benjamin Franklin and some other folks. He's currently working on one about Louis Armstrong, but his current book is a really interesting treatment. It's sort of a memoir of his career in journalism and his imagining of where the field is going, wrapped up in all these beautiful profiles of really prominent people, particularly in American history. It should be a fascinating conversation. We're so proud to be able to bring you people of this caliber on the show. That support is possible because of your contributions at 1-888-694-6931. I mean, Jeff and I know it is, we don't like to think it's a luxury, but it's really a wonderful thing to be able to be at a station this size and have local programming where you are the focus of the conversation that we have with these national and international figures.
Yeah, we're really thrilled to be able to bring you these conversations, and we do it for you. You know, and if it wasn't Chris And if it wasn't me sitting here, someone else would be doing this, because that's what public radio is all about. And when you support KERA, you're supporting the programming that you already listen to. You're supporting the programming that you already use. You're supporting the shows that bring you information that you need in order to continue to be an effective, well-informed citizen of of North Texas, of the United States, of the world. That's what public radio is about. That's what we're asking you to support. And if it, you know, like I said, if it wasn't Chris, if it wasn't me, it'd be somebody else.
And that's because it's not about us.
That's right.
It's not. This is not personality driven radio, except in to the extent that we want you to understand the people that we're featuring on the show. And we're really proud. That's the way we'd like to work. There are other places where you can have it the other way, and the host sort of tells you what to think and what he or she thinks.
There's plenty of that out there.
Exactly.
No need. Just dial around.
But we're the only game in town. If this is the sort of culture of ideas and civil discourse course that you really value. Your contribution is a vote for this kind of radio. 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to kera.org.
It is your public radio station. It is up to you to support it. So please do your part at 888-694-6931. We don't have tickets left to see Greg Mortensen. However, we do have any number of copies of The Irrational Economist when you join the station at the $120 membership level. Thank you to Richard Adams and Rowlett. Thank you to Rita Lawson in Dallas for doing your part. Please do your part right now at 888-694-6931.
Again, we have a brand new number, 888-694-6931. The membership works exactly as it always has, just a little shift in the digits. And you can go online and make your contribution at kera.org. I'll give you the phone number one more time, 888-694-6931.